The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 Podcast.
We welcome you back, and it's great to have all of you here on the program. More of your phone calls at 855-242-7285, 855-242-7285. Already a busy show. Heather Dinich got things started a couple of hours ago with quite a controversial statement about the SEC East being one of the weakest in college football, her argument being that Iowa State and Oklahoma, the Big 12, has a better chance of getting two in the college football playoff than the SEC East. We've talked about a number of other issues. We're delighted to welcome Blake Topmeyer to our program. You've heard Blake many, many times here, who's covered the University of Tennessee for many, many years. He's now with USA Today. And Blake, thank you very much for joining us. So much on the docket. Let's start with NIL, and I know that's been the topic for the past 2 weeks. What are you hearing, and what does it all mean as we say hello to you?
Yeah, how you doing, Paul? I think with the name, image, and likeness, I think one of the things that's really striking me is the variety of athletes that we're seeing strike deals from this. I mean, the early boogeyman in the closet argument that you heard a lot of arguments, but one of them was that the only athletes who are going to cash in on this were your football stars and your basketball stars. And I think we're seeing that's simply not true. I mean, you look at the high end, you see the LSU gymnast, Olivia Dunn, having one of the top levels of profitability, not only from her skills as a gymnast, but the social media following that she's developed, where she has more than 5 million followers combined on TikTok and Instagram. But even at a smaller level, you look at someone like Alabama softball pitcher Montana Fouts and what she'll be able to earn making appearances on Cameo. You know, we're not talking huge money there, but for some of these Olympic sports athletes, not the so-called non-revenue sports, I think their top earning potential as athletes comes during their college years. And once those years are over, you know, the window has closed for a lot of them to earn money off of what they do in athletics or off the fame that they have from their standing athletics. And I think that's been one of the most striking things for me is yes, we see the deals for the football players and the basketball players, but we're seeing it really across all sports. Not always huge sums of money, but I think the avenues are there.
Blake Topmeyer with us. Blake, on NIL, we're seeing the early moments of it, and I think it's going to get a little bit different when players show up for campus. But the next 2 weeks, media days will be raging throughout the country, from Hoover to Charlotte to, you know, everywhere else. How much do you think these questions are going to dominate media days, especially in the SEC?
I think a lot. I mean, I think every year there's something, right? You know, there's always the off-season storylines, whether it be changes to the transfer landscape, cost of attendance. The total cost of attendance was a big storyline at SEC Media Days, I recall, from a few years ago, and supposedly that was going to kind of turn the sport on its head, and universities would be using total cost of attendance money as a recruiting chip against other schools. And then you had the off-season dialogue around satellite camps. That was more so for coaches than athletes. But, you know, we always seem to have these off-season storylines. I think this one, in terms of the way it changes college athletics, really trumps all of those. I mean, obviously it puts an end to the amateur model to the extent that it even really existed anymore anyway. You know, I mean, this is a significant change to the landscape. But I think, you know, I think once the season gets here and once we see that college football is still in many ways the way college football was a year ago, you know, I think it will kind of move from the forefront of your mind to the back of your mind. But for the athletes, some athletes in particular, this could be a life-changing development for them.
it certainly has dominated the offseason because it is new and it's I wonder about this from a journalistic standpoint. It's hard not to root for these young men and women, and you know, whether the coverage is fawning or not, I'm not sure it can be anything else. Discuss that part of it as a young journalist who now works for a major news and sports gathering operation. How do you weigh the adulation for these young players to celebrate versus the objectivity of what we're all talking about here? Or is there any objectivity left when it comes to college athletics because the NCAA has bungled it so badly?
Well, one thing I was thinking about the other day, Paul, was like, who's harmed by this? You know, when you think of changes, usually there's winners and losers. And I think you have to dig pretty deep to find the losers in this change. I mean, the athletes, I wouldn't say they're the losers. They have an opportunity now to make money off their fame during their college years, to make money off their name, image, and likeness, just like the tuba player in the band can. The companies and rich individuals, if this is a way that they think is wise to spend their money, then why are they at fault? You know, how are they harmed? I would say they're not. And even the colleges, you know, I think the colleges benefit from these deals. There's inherent publicity that comes from this. I mean, you think LSU gymnastics isn't using Olivia Dunn's profitability thanks to what she's built on her social media to its own benefit? I mean, there was LSU gymnastics on July 2nd putting out a promo video for its program featuring Olivia Dunn, and the message was really quite clear. It was come to LSU and you can be a star athlete and you can get paid like a star athlete. So, yeah. You know, I'm really trying to find, you know, who's being harmed by this. I mean, maybe traditionalists who want to go back to the glory days of amateur athletics, but I think we've put that in the past anyway. We're far past that now, and we see, you know, college coaches earning $6 to $10 million, getting paid for years and years not to coach when they get buyout money. So again, I just, you know, whether it's rooting or not rooting for someone, in situations like this, I often think, who's being helped by this and who's being harmed by this? And for me, it's hard to see many people who are being harmed.
Which brings me to another issue in the same vein, I should say. And that is, you know, what used to be a big story, and that was malfeasance in sports and cheating. And it wasn't all that long ago. And now, I mean, what do you have to do? And I ask you this as somebody who covered the situation at Tennessee, but what do you have to do to get on the NCAA's radar screen after NIL?
Yeah, I mean, I think this certainly changes that. And I guess that is maybe one of the bigger concerns for this is how is this going to affect recruiting? I think to a certain extent, it brings out of the shadows and into the light what was probably already occurring to some extent. I think also it's sort of a throwing up the hands a little bit of trying to police all of this. I mean, I think now in some ways, until you have uniform legislation, maybe it'd be more difficult to police. But in other ways, I think you're making, I mean, the NCAA straight says boosters can give athletes money. You know, now you're not supposed to give recruits money based on their choosing of a particular school. Will that be difficult to police? Sure, it will be. Was cheating and boosters giving money to recruits difficult to police before? Absolutely, it was. Now, I think there's incentive to do this above board. And might we not like the idea of a Miami businessman giving everybody on the roster money if they want to play for Miami? Sure, some people might not like that. But to me, it's better to have that stuff happening above board than operating in the shadows. I think the NCAA has shown for years they have a difficult time policing recruiting violations in the first place. They're very inconsistent with how they approach some of that. I think, you know, in the short term, there's certainly going to be a lack of uniformity here. But I think in the long term, to me, at least now there's some encouragement, like I said, to move some of this out of the shadows, do things above board, and do it in a right way.
I mean, this next question may come under the category of ex post facto, but now that we know what we're talking about, does it make Tennessee's decision to fall on its sword a couple of months ago look even more ridiculous than some people think it looks anyway?
You know, I'm not sure. Does this help? Does the changing landscape maybe help mitigate the potential penalties they're facing? Maybe you can make that argument. I think the problem that Tennessee is going to run into, though, is Tennessee's problem was that the program and members within the program were orchestrating impermissible benefits to recruits. I mean, those are the allegations from university administrators themselves. You know, these weren't people outside the program. These aren't boosters we're talking about. The allegations are that people within the program were orchestrating impermissible benefits to recruits, which will remain against NCAA rules going forward. So I think that's where Tennessee runs into trouble. In terms of the falling on its sword, to me, I think that's so hard to know in the long term whether that was the right move or not. I think Tennessee wanted out of a bad deal with Jeremy Pruitt. I think they made the calculated decision that using this avenue to not pay Pruitt his buyout was the way to go. And I think, yes, they've opened themselves up to potentially a harsher penalty by being so forthright and honest at the front end about the level of malfeasance that was occurring. Whether that was the right thing to do, I think ultimately will be determined by how stiff the penalty is, by how well Josh Heupel performs. I don't think there will ever be any clamoring to bring to bring Jeremy Pruitt back or to wish that era hadn't ended the way it did. But I certainly think if the Heupel era does not go well, and if Tennessee, let's say, faces some stiff penalties from the NCAA, then yes, in hindsight, I think there will be a lot of folks saying what they've been saying all along, and that's that you should have settled with Pruitt right on the front end, and you shouldn't have fired him for cause. You should have just paid him his buyout and walked away from the situation.
Blake Hotmeyer with us from USA Today. There's a lot on the field we would like to get to with Blake, and we will do that right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
We are joined by Blake Hotmeyer from USA Today. A lot of things we've talked about off the field. Blake, we're about to get on the field, amazingly. I know you've written about a number of coaches recently, including Lane Kiffin. He's been to Neyland as an assistant. He'll be there as a head coach this fall. But as you dig deep into the Lane Kiffin story, you seem to be indicating that things are changing. Maybe he looks back at his career a little bit differently, and maybe the upside's higher than what some originally thought. What is your take?
It is interesting. You know, whether Lane Kiffin has truly changed or not, I think it's tough to say. That would take someone that probably knew him early in his career and knows him now. But I do think Lane Kiffin believes he's changed. I don't think he was just saying that because he thought it sounded good. I think he truly believes he's He's a different coach today than he was in his early 30s. He was very candid about that, said that his time at Florida Atlantic changed him. He said that was his first time really not coaching on the big stage. You know, even early in his career, he was an analyst for the Jacksonville Jaguars, and then he quickly became an assistant at USC, and he was at college football's mecca. He never had to rough it. He said if his son wanted to get into coaching, he would hope that he would kind of have to start out at the smaller school route and work his way up. You know, he was reflecting on his early days as a coach, said he was ego-driven, selfish, motivated by bettering his own resume, and he said his time at Florida Atlantic, you know, made him realize that it should be a little bit more about the players. And again, I mean, I think you could say that's just coach speak, but I really didn't get that sense from Lane. I got the sense that he really does believe he is a different coach today than he was 10 plus years ago, and I think he believes that makes him a better coach. What was interesting is reliving that Tennessee exit, and the way I put it to Lane was, had the USC job not opened in January 2010, where would he be coaching today? And he had a good long think about that, and he said Tennessee. Now, do I believe that? Probably not. I think a number of things could have happened between then and now that would have resulted in Lane Kiffin not being the coach at Tennessee. But I thought it was interesting that he said that. And certainly in Knoxville, he remains as much of a lightning rod as ever. And I think even across the country, he's one of college football's more fascinating and polarizing figures.
I mean, I'm dumbfounded that he would say that, but and one thing's for sure, I think we would both agree, I bet he would agree privately, that he wouldn't still be there. But I do think it's interesting to think, Blake, where that program would be if Lane Kiffin had stuck around a little bit longer, and would that have caused the absolute cratering that we have all encountered, you more than most?
And it's fascinating to interact with Vols fans, to talk with people about Lane Kiffin, because you get such a wide range of emotions, of responses. I mean, every Tennessee fan feels some type of way about Lane Kiffin. There's not, you know, you mentioned Derek Dooley to a Tennessee fan, and you might get kind of a tepid response, but you're not going to get that with Lane Kiffin. But I tell you, it really is on both sides of the aisle. There is a certain section of the fan base that has not forgiven Lane for his middle of the night exit after one season for USC, and I think will never forgive Lane. And I think there's another somewhat sizable section of the fan base that I think feels like Lane is the one who got away. I mean, it's like that high school girlfriend who dumped you, and at the time it made you mad and hurt your pride, but you thought, you know what, in the long run, I'll show her. I'm gonna upgrade. Well, in the end, now you look back and Lane's that middle aged woman who's not looking all that bad, and you've gone through three divorces. And you're on marriage number four, and your life's not gone so well, you know. And so I think, you know, from that perspective, there is a feeling of, boy, you know, wish you would have stayed around a little bit longer. It really is split in Knoxville, and I think that's why I think his return as a coach is going to be fascinating. And yes, he was back a couple times as an offensive coordinator. I think coming back as a head coach of a program that might very well be ranked inside the top 25 when that game occurs is going to be very, very interesting. And I think what he has going on in Oxford's interesting, because, you know, I don't know if they're going to be able to stop anybody on defense, but they're going to continue to score a lot of points, and they might have the best quarterback in the conference.
And I don't think this is a germane question any longer, but because the controversy over Kiffin really cancels it out. But is it a better question whether Philip Fulmer should have been replaced?
you know,
as football coach, not
goes,
athletic director.
That's one that goes back and forth too. I think hard for me to say, you know, so much before I was here. I think, you know, talking to folks that were around then, I think certainly the argument could be made that a change was needed. I think the way it worked out obviously was very detrimental to Tennessee, and that the guy that they hired to replace him left after one season, and then the roster was set back even further. And then, you know, I think the Derek Dooley era set it back even further. So it's one of those things that if they make the right hire after Philip Fulmer, if they hire someone who's successful and stays, then I don't think anybody's looking back on it saying, well, they should have stuck it out with Fulmer. The way it's panned out, I think it's easy to say now for sure. But I guess I would more point the blame toward not getting those first couple hires right in the aftermath of transitioning away from Fulmer.
Yeah, we're only talking about three mistakes since then, and we don't know yet. And I'll ask you about Heupel now. And, you know, I can go back to the first year of Kiffin, Dooley, Butch, and Jeremy Pruitt. I think I may have meant to say four mistakes, but and it's always fired. How based on what you've seen personally and what you know from history, you know, how is the Heupel hire going over at least before the first game?
I think it's been met with a fairly lukewarm response. I think Tennessee fans do seem to have an understanding that given the circumstances, the home run hire was an all but impossible task. And that's a different lane for a lot of Tennessee fans to operate in. I mean, I know you've followed these coaching searches over the years with great interest, you know, I mean, normally Tennessee thinks they're going to get, if not John Gruden, then whoever the hottest candidate is out there. I don't think this time, I think they had a clear understanding that that wasn't going to happen here. There was going to be a slim chance of a home run hire. I think a lot of Tennessee fans are reserving judgment on Josh Heupel. I think they're willing to give him a chance. I think there is some sense of excitement that at least the offense could be more entertaining, because you look back at the last 3 years under Jeremy Pruitt, you know, when Tennessee was losing, oftentimes they weren't just losing, they were getting blown out and they weren't scoring many points. I mean, there's really nothing worse than sitting through a couple seasons of 49-10 losses. So, I mean, I think there's some reserved optimism that that Tennessee will at least feature a little bit more of an exciting brand of football under Josh Heupel. But I would say, in general, the excitement level as to compared to what you would normally see for a first-year coach, it doesn't match up. I mean, you know how it is. Anytime a new coach comes in here, fans always think that this is going to be the guy that's going to get the program humming. And it doesn't matter if that's at Tennessee, if that's anywhere. That's the way it always, almost always is. I think this is a different circumstance here. I don't know that I talk to many people that think Josh Heupel is absolutely the answer to Tennessee's woes. I do talk to a lot of Tennessee fans, though, that think given the circumstances, he's an acceptable hire, and they're willing to give him a chance.
When his boss, Danny White, came in, there was almost universal praise, and then he hired Josh Heupel. What and I know sometimes it's hard to judge an AD other than on his coaching hires, but how has that gone during these first 6 months?
Well, the first few months was about as bizarre as you could start in AD tenure. You had Danny White taking the stage after he was introduced and all but guaranteeing he was going to make an outside-the-box coaching hire, that a name that was not on anybody's hot board. He kind of bragged about how in the past he'd made those types of hires, and you could tell he was proud of that fact. And then he kind of backed himself into a corner then when he had to announce that he'd hired the guy that was his last coach and was the most obvious hire in hiring Josh Heupel. And then he twice insulted Tennessee fans and called them too negative. He did that at an introductory press conference, and he followed up in an interview with VolQuest and said Tennessee fans were too negative, which was, I thought, a very, very curious move. I'll go a step further than that. It was a foolish move. It wasn't curious. It was foolish to call your new fans negative, whether there might be some truth into that. I also think you could describe Vols fans as passionate as well. But I think after that rocky start, I think he's learned some things. I think he has focused his efforts into fundraising. I think he's going to be an effective fundraiser for Tennessee. I think that's very important. I don't think Tennessee's fundraising has been where it needs to be in the past few years. And I think Danny White has a good track record in that area. You know, Tennessee's coming off of a very successful baseball season in which it reached College World Series. And I think they're getting serious about making a facility investment to improve their baseball facilities. And I think Danny White's the right guy to lead that charge. So I guess I would kind of divide it up into two segments. First few months, I didn't think it was a great start, and I thought he was running afoul of some Vol fans in ways that really he didn't even need to. It's like, just stop talking. But I think in the last couple months, it's been much, much better. And I think in the long term, this is still going to be a good AD hire for Tennessee.
So much we have dealt with there. And Blake, thanks for the time. I know it was a little bit longer than we had booked you for, but you were fantastic, and I look forward to seeing you soon. And please come back.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks, Paul.
Blake Todmeyer from USA Today used to cover the Vols for the Knoxville News Sentinel. And we are coming back. We'll finally get to your phone calls at 855-242-7285 right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Paul. That's hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
We are back, and I know it's been a while since we've had a chance to get to your phone calls, but we can do that right now. 855-242-7285 is the number. Let's get back to the calls. And how about Mike, who is up next? Hey, Mike, thanks.
Hey, Paul, how you doing?
Mike, we're doing great. Thank you.
Great. Hey, going back to your discussion on if your former or if your callers could take advantage of NIL.
Right. Yeah, what do you got?
I've got a winner for you. Advertising for Old Spice would be Mariner.
Boy, Mariner is one of the all-time great callers to the show. Yeah, he had quite a history, you hate to see anyone pass away, but he was really one of those guys that we missed.
Paul, I do have one other question, and I know a few days ago somebody kind of beat me to the punch on this one, but on the NIL, was there ever any discussion on how to get money back to the players other than just one guy or say a quarterback making a ton of money, could money be put into a pot to be distributed to the whole team, like every bit that Bryce makes or every bit that, you know, Anderson makes goes into a pot and they all distribute it evenly?
I don't think so, because I believe the structure is based specifically on the individual, and you've probably heard me say this, but the idea behind all the state laws and by the NCAA legislation is for each player to be able to take advantage of their name, image, and likeness. So I think when you get to it more broadly, it defies what the premise is. But I tell you what, I'm going to quit trying to answer. We have a lawyer on in a few minutes, and I'll let him answer it.
Oh, thank you very much.
Thank you for the call. I really do appreciate that. It's a good question, though. How about Thomas up next? Thomas, you're on the air.
Hey, Paul, how are you doing?
We are doing well.
I was calling about the NIL. I don't think that back in the 80s and the 70s that the players would have made very much, but I do believe, because I'm sure that you had this guy CD, that the Miami Hurricanes would have benefited the most back in the mid-80s and early 90s from Luther Campbell. When he was had two lines,
oh, no doubt.
When he was roaming the sidelines.
Yeah, but you mean even more than they already did?
Yeah. But with him, he would have dumped so much money. Well, I'm sure that he did anyway. But he would have legally had dumped so much money into those players' pockets that it wouldn't have been funny. He probably would have gone broke doing it. But I think those, you know, I don't think the players in the 70s and 80s would have really made that much money, because I don't think there was that much disposable income. But I think now, with it being wide open, especially like y'all were talking about Olivia Dune, my daughter follows her on TikTok and all that other stuff, and she hadn't announced yet what she's going to do, but she's going to make a killing. She's going to make more than probably anybody else.
Yeah, and I think it's those unique ones, and you just said it, the ones that affect a lot of people, young people, she may not be known to college football fans, but she's known to a lot of young people out there, like your daughter, and that's really where the action is.
Right, and these people on TikTok and Instagram, stuff like that, they're already making a ton of money, which prohibited her or other female athletes from being able to do that, even though they weren't promoting anything as far as from their college standpoint, whether it be a fashion or lip gloss or something, you know, makeup or anything like that. But now that's going to open the door up for these girls to really be able to cash in my opinion.
No, I think you're 100% correct, and I really thank you for the call. Appreciate it. Let's check in with Tony next. Hey, Tony, go right ahead.
Hey, Paul, good to talk to you. And I just had a question. You mentioned a few weeks ago some things in your earlier years that you regretted maybe saying, and I was wanting to ask you about that. But also I was wanting to know, why is success at the college level, why is it judged by your success against Alabama? Why is Alabama the standard, and why is a 10-2 team, why is that not considered successful anymore?
Well, you know, the second part, I think we live in such a playoff world where if you don't go to the playoffs, it almost feels disappointed. When at the beginning of my career and going back many, many years, if you got to a big bowl game, that was a big, that was really huge. I remember covering Auburn early in my career under Pat Dye. They had been on probation. They went to, I think, the Citrus Bowl, and it was like the biggest thing in the world. That would be something now that players would skip. Back to your question about me, and a lot of you don't know that much about the early part of my career. There's no way you could. You weren't alive. The biggest regret I think I have is as a newspaper writer and a columnist, I think I was too harsh on players. I mean, I finally realized that's not what I should be doing. It took me a while to understand it, but I didn't understand it at a very early, young and early age. I just thought, hey, everybody's the same. I later found out these are young people who they may not be successful, but they probably shouldn't be harshly criticized, and I did that.
You used to be on Jocks, I think, from Birmingham was where you were, the radio show that you had, and you made it really hard to like you. and one of the things, and I know that's your job to get controversy stirred up, and you had some vicious callers back then. But I think one of the things you probably, if you think back, you might regret not just being hard on players, but you were so harsh.
Well, no, you're right. That's a good point too.
You were harsh to Mark Richt.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right about that.
You were harsh to him. He was always on the hot seat.
Yeah.
And I believe you had a part in people wanting him to leave Georgia when he had he averaged 10.2.
No, he did, and I regret it to this day because he you're 100% correct. And yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things you learn over your career, and I've changed. I've had a lot of people don't like what I'm doing. You know, they think I've completely reversed roles, but you do mature. Forget getting older; that's obvious. But you do understand the medium that you're in and how important it is to everyone. Hey, thanks for the call. We're up against a break. More to come right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
We are coming to the end of the third hour. If you want to get a quick call in here, we'll take you. A couple more guests to come. I know we've been busy with guests, but we sprinkle in calls in between. The phone number here hasn't changed, by the way. It's 855-242-7285. Back to what we talked about at the beginning of the show. Heather Dinich came on, and she said a couple of really interesting things, and I'm surprised we haven't had more reaction to it. She said the Big 12 has a better chance than the SEC of getting two teams in the college football playoff. She said the SEC East is one of the weakest divisions in college football. She said the Big 12 has a better chance of getting two, Iowa State and Oklahoma. She also said Florida is not in her preseason top 25. How about that? Meanwhile, we talked recruiting. When did we talk recruiting? The other day with Tom Luganville and a couple other people. Alabama just picked up a monster recruit, Jeremiah Alexander, a five-star edge rusher from the state. He was, I think, the first commitment. He's from Alabaster, which is just south of Birmingham. He's 6'2", 235, the number one rated edge rusher in the country, according to 24/7. He's ranked top 20 in the country overall. He had originally committed to Alabama, and then he had opened it back up, and it looked like Georgia, Clemson, just for starters, got back into it, and ultimately it came down between Alabama and Clemson. Now, I realize we still have a few months to go before signing day. But when you make a commitment and then you open it up and then you come back, it looks like that's probably where you're going. And I know from some of my Alabama friends, they're pretty fired up, beating Clemson in Georgia. He's from Thompson High School, so that's a huge commitment. One of the best football schools in Alabama. So that's where we are. We're 3 hours in now. We're going to talk a little more NIL in the next hour. We'll continue with your phone calls at 855-242-7285. So a long way to go before we're done, another hour. And you can line up some calls now, and we are coming right back.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.